Welcome to episode 200 of Telepractice Today with Kim Dutrow-Allen and Dr. Todd Houston.
Okay, for the 200th time, welcome back to another episode. Since this is our 200th time, I thought I would share how we got started doing this. And this is Kim's version of how this got started.
Oh, man. So here, let me just... So Kim's the hero.
Are you gonna preface
I'm the
this?
Bad guy. Okay, go ahead. Tell your story. Okay.
This is my version of it. So the year was 2020 and the worst year of our Lord, as some people like to call it. And me and Todd were watching each other, I think, run around all of these digital spaces, trying to calm everyone down that this wasn't going to ruin their lives, that they had to do telepractice. It was possible. You could see students. You could see toddlers, babies. Just don't expect them to look at the screen. All of these questions that we were answering. And then I got... I think it was a Facebook message from Todd that said, I have an idea. And I was sitting there waiting for what this idea was going to be. I want to start a podcast with you. And there I was. I had a one-year-old baby, two other kids, husband at home, me at home. We're all doing online learning. And then I got asked to start a podcast. And because Todd was my professor in a former professor years ago at Utah State, I felt like I couldn't say no because it was an assignment from my professor. I could have said no. I would have said no if it really hadn't worked. But, and then when I said, okay, I think I could do that, I've listened to enough true crime podcasts. I think I know how this is done. And then in professor fashion, after I said yes, he then asked me to outline the first 10 episodes. So I did my homework and I picked like 10 of the best people that I had seen online sharing information. And to my surprise, I think almost every single one of them said yes the first time we asked. And now 200 episodes later, we have so many people that we have come on here and ask questions and have shared their knowledge about telepractice. And it has made me a better clinician. And I hope that it's made all of you listening better clinicians as well. And as long as we can, we will continue to do it because we love sharing that information.
I agree. And you've made this journey so easy. And I really appreciate all that you have done to and continue to do for the podcast, Kim. And, and I wouldn't be here without you. If you had said no, I would have like, okay, I'm not going to do this.
Never mind.
I'm out. I'm out if Kim can't do it with me. So I'm so thrilled that we've been able to do this and build this podcast. And you're right. It's I think you've said before, you know, it gives us a chance each week to sit down with someone that we may not know as well and learn from them.
Yeah.
And have some adult conversations around something we're passionate about, and that's telepractice.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. And I have to say, I hope I didn't make you sound like the bad guy because I very much appreciate you. And I appreciate the just the connections that we've had and that I've had with you over the years, and that it has given me a chance to have sometimes the only adult conversations that I have with anyone outside of my house. So I have very much appreciated that.
Yeah, well, it's been a real joy doing this with you. And I just, I'm so thankful that we're able to be together on this. And speaking of this episode, our 200th, we've invited back two previous guests, Michelle Bovaire, our good friend, and Genevieve Richardson. And Michelle's going to talk about some of the pediatric stuff that she's been doing. And Genevieve is going to talk about, of course, some of the adult patients she's working with. both through telepractice. So I'm thrilled to have those very popular, very talented, experienced telepractitioners coming back to join us on this 200th episode.
Great. I think it will go down as one of my favorites.
I agree.
Hi, are you creative? Do you want to give a webinar or teach a course? Maybe you're a writer. Do you want to create a blog? Maybe you have an idea for a podcast. Whatever your passion is, we at 3C Digital Media Network want you to be a content creator so we can bring your ideas to life. So, to get started, visit our website at 3cdigitalmedianetwork.com and sign up to be a content creator. We look forward to seeing your passions come to life on our platform.
Well, Michelle and Genevieve, welcome back to the podcast. I know people who've been avid listeners have heard you guys before, but please, if you don't mind, introduce yourselves, and then we'll jump into this 200th episode of Telepractice Today.
Yay. Go ahead, Michelle. Hi, I am Dr. Michelle Boisvert. I am a school-based speech and language pathologist and have been doing telepractice for well over a decade. And I'm also the co-founder of Easy Report Pro, which is a report writing software.
Nate.
Genevieve.
My name's Genevieve Richardson. I am in private practice. Life speech pathology is my business. I've been in telepractice for 10 years. I learned from my mentor, Bill Connors, who started in telepractice in 2005, back when we didn't have Zoom, WebEx.
Yeah.
He was on Uvu at the time.
Oh, I remember those.
And when I met Bill, I was attending a conference of his. He was teaching neuroplasticity and aphasia, something to that effect. And he literally in the conference had people come in, his clients come in on Uvu. And it was just two talking heads and a chat, you know,
right,
the chat thing. When I joined Bill's business in 2014, we were on WebEx.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved WebEx. That was a platform I learned on. I love that whiteboard. And maybe that's something we need to talk about, Michelle.
I know.
Love the whiteboard for content, for helping people remember what we did, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been in the space. My specialty is aphasia and chronic aphasia. And telepractice is the way to go for the population that I serve.
Awesome. Well, Michelle, why don't we start with you? Just, I know you mentioned before we started recording sort of your dissertation, how you got sort of into it. Just take a moment and sort of remind everyone of how you got into telepractice. And then we can talk about one of your students or a case that you've worked with before.
Yes. Well, I first became really interested in the use of technology to deliver services probably before I started my PhD, when around 2005, 2006, when I was a clinician, traveling to schools that were very, very far away, over an hour each way, and talking with the team members there about trying to figure out how there's got to be a better way to deliver more consistent services, to provide more strategies and supports for educators. And it was through that path of really dire need of clinical services for these schools who were in more remote areas of Massachusetts, which is where I live, that kind of led my way to telepractice. And then I had the opportunity, the wonderful opportunity to go to the University of Massachusetts in Amherst through a grant. And the focus was on telepractice. And we used GoToMeeting. That was our GoToMeeting, which also had a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. But what our team aimed to do was really look at how children who were in like mainstream schools, how they could access and what their clinical progress was like when clinicians would deliver telepractice services versus on-site services. So we really compared the outcomes of that type of the telepractice interventions.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So was that was there like a research initiative there at UMass?
There was, yes. Dr. Mary Andrianopoulos received a nice grant from the Department of Education, I think. A while ago. Yeah. And that funded this research for a cohort of us. There was a group of us, that really looked at telepractice, tele-AAC, and how we could implement this technology kind of broader. But we were, dealing with dial-up. We were dealing with trying to figure out what type of platform we could use. And now here we are. Look at us.
Yeah. Wow.
So interesting.
Yeah.
She was ahead of her time getting that going.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm curious, Michelle, if I can jump in and ask a question.
Yes.
How was it during the pandemic when so many more students, I'm sure, are getting on telepractice that had not had any experience? I'm sure that was a big pivot.
Well, what's really interesting is that the students had no problem getting on telepractice. Students got it. The people that needed the support, I see Kim laughing, were the clinicians. Even though telepractice, obviously we all have been doing telepractice for a long time, still it was kind of shocking, I think, for a lot of clinicians to be suddenly, I don't want to say forced into doing telepractice, but being suddenly required to do telepractice.
Right.
In the environmental and societal platform of this global pandemic. So it was it was really interesting. And that's why I think podcasts like this were and are so amazing, because they provided the knowledge, a knowledge base, a knowledge source where people could go and get some information of how the heck do we do this?
Right.
And this is why I shouldn't freak out when my technology's not working. But
a lot of mental flexibility. We're all getting this nice neuroplastic benefit from having to cope and pivot and deal with Zoom updates. But that's a whole that could be a whole other podcast.
Oh, I know. All my buttons moved when I got on today. But I was going to say, Genevieve, with that, maybe it is a thing of neuroplasticity, because I was going to say, I think it was also harder for the parents than it was the kids as well to figure out how to do this online learning thing.
If I can jump in about, even though I don't work directly with kids, Bill and I, we were actually teaching telepractice. He started it, but then he brought me in to help teach telepractice. And we trained hundreds of clinicians at the beginning of the pandemic. And what I think is really interesting is the evolution. When you had to do telepractice that first year in 2020, and mom is driving to the grocery store and the kids in the back seat with the iPhone trying to do telepractice, I think that pandemic really helped us figure out what works, what doesn't work, what are the hard no's. I don't have any clients. if for some reason somebody's computer is down. Again, I work with adults, but if their computer's down, we don't pivot to the iPhone because it doesn't work for how I do treatment. iPad is the minimum. I'd prefer an iPad over a Chromebook. I'd prefer a desktop over all of those. I mean, if I could vote. So I think the pandemic was really an interesting place in telepractice that helped us really kind of define. If we are working really hard to be as equivalent or better, and I would argue better in a lot of instances than in-person treatment, because now, our reach is so much further, we have to have standards.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
For how it happens, or the visit gets canceled, or, figure out the next iteration of it.
Genevieve, you brought up a really interesting point about the standards in terms of hardware. What are some other like have-tos that you really need and that you think are like really supportive of telepractice, especially with adults?
You have to have a decent computer with a solid Wi-Fi connection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If somebody's freezing, you know, and I won't say that. You know, even though I pay for a high tier on my internet connection, there's things that happen here in Austin. If we get a severe thunderstorm, I like start cringing because I just don't know what my connection's going to be. For the last 3 years, not this year, thankfully, but 3 years previous, we had an ice storm. When we had an ice storm, we had downed wires. So I was out. You know, it's like I'm calling and canceling until we got back to power. So minimum standard, a decent iPad. An iPad is great.
A keyboard. For receiving.
For receiving.
Yeah.
I want to do it on an iPad.
Right. Me either.
I would be more inclined to cancel the session and reschedule. I need my big, I can do it on a laptop, but I prefer, I've got the big iMac.
I finally got me a second monitor that like is a travel one, because a lot of times I'll go to visit my parents and still be doing telepractice, and I might have a 15 inch now laptop was just not covering it.
Yeah.
When I had to do all these things with kids, so I finally broke down and got a second monitor that is about the same size as my laptop and I can just fit in my bag to take with me. But yeah, that's a necessity.
It is. I like for my adults to have a keyboard. Even if they're on an iPad, I want them to have a keyboard, because our day and age, we have to do typing,
right?
Everything is online. And you have to be able to plug in to your iPhone or your iPad. I can't tell you how I have my cords set up. You can't see them, but I have my cord set up here so I can plug in my iPhone if I need to demonstrate how to set up the accessibility part on the iPhone. Or I plug in my iPad if I want to share my screen for, you know, an app I have.
Yep.
On there.
Yep.
Chromebooks can work, but on Zoom, the person on the Chromebook, they can't type on the whiteboard.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I liked someone's description that a Chromebook is a laptop, but broken.
I mean, it's
fantastic.
I had one gentleman that I saw for a long time, and he had a Chromebook, and yep, we looked around it because there wasn't another option.
Well, and during the pandemic, that's almost what every single school sent kids home with, was a Chromebook. So, yep, we had to figure it out.
So how do you guys cope with that with the kids with a Chromebook?
So for us, I think, Kim, you mentioned it's much easier to receive telepractice on
a less than ideal
screen versus delivering, like versus initiating. And like, so we, as clinicians, we tended to use two screens, so two devices. And the reason for that was a couple of things. And we use Zoom. So we would use one device primarily for streaming audio and video. And what we found was that made that connection a bit more stable. We used the other screen for screen sharing.
Hmm.
So, and that made that connection more stable, and we were able to monitor what a student's screen looked like on the first one. So it kind of was also quality control, as well as kind of help, you know, we kind of like separated the two needs that we were doing for telepractice. It made it a bit more stable. And if one didn't work, we always had a backup.
I like that idea. Yeah, so you would join the Zoom meeting from the second computer.
Exactly. And the second computer served as the audio and video. The first computer served as the material sharing.
Nice.
I learned something new today.
Well, on your 200th episode.
Yeah. I literally an hour ago, I was going because I'm delivering this treatment that I've got my slides that I need to share. Plus, I see the client's notebook, like what they're looking at. They have it printed out. And then I have my instructor manual. And even though I've got this 27-inch screen, it was getting a little crowded. So I was trying to get the slides on my laptop. But for some reason, I couldn't get it to show on Zoom. So I'll just log in from the laptop next time.
Yes. Yeah.
And Thank you. Wow. That was awesome.
Oh, no. Now my husband has another thing that can justify him buying another computer. I tell him I need two to connect.
Just tell him the school will buy it for him. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he usually does.
Yeah. But I was going to say that approach also could be helpful. Say, for example, you have a Chromebook and just a cell phone. You could do the audio and video on your cell phone and then the material work on your
Chromebook. On the Chromebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah.
So maybe you just need a fancier cell phone, a new cell phone, Kim.
Right?
I could swing that too.
iPad.
An iPad. Mm-hmm. I think I'm the only person in my house who does not have their own iPad, including the 5-year-old. So that seems unfair.
Very unfair.
I use it probably more for note taking on like sessions. I use Notability. Right. And take notes, or if I want to document on top of a PDF kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Good idea.
But I don't tend to use it that much. The battery tends to die. That's why I just keep it in here with my cord and, you know, plug in whenever I need to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking I could show my slides for this example I was just giving from my iPad.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that would make it easy to
scroll and
scroll through, zoom in, zoom out. All of that would be really easy.
Neat. Michelle, how much do you use the internet for looking up things? Like maybe like spur of the moment versus planned?
So let's see. So like during, like in the midst of a session, using the internet as part of the session, Oh, this is so funny. So I try to be as planned as possible only because sometimes unexpected things will like pop up on the internet and will kind of like diverge the session. So a lot of the students that I work with through telepractice are like, maybe they have, either they're on the spectrum or they're, you know, I've worked with students who have pretty significant behavior needs and need pretty significant behavior support. So I really do try to be as kind structured and planned as possible.
I would say I do have a student right now that is on the autism spectrum, and this student, his motivation is that I will look up facts about the Titanic if he works with me for a couple minutes.
There you go.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I'll use Kiddle, is a like kind of a kids safe, more kids safe Google version of Google. So I'll use Kiddle to look those kinds of things up so I can, you know, minimize some random things going up. I will also look things up before I screen share it. Like, so just drag it onto another screen, look it up, preview it a little bit, and then drag it into where I am screen sharing to kind of hopefully prevent some of those random things that come up.
That's a great idea, Kim. Genevieve, will you often use the internet on the fly, search on the fly?
A ton. Yeah. Because I follow a lot of the life participation approach. So it's whatever is relevant to them at the time, or if there's something that just happened in the news, we might look up something, or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I pivot constant.
Now, do you have any favorite like websites that you go to, or will you just do like a Google search?
I do have a few that I go to. I love TalkPath News for these short little news stories for adults. They say they're 1 minute, but depends on your reading speed. you know, 1 to 3 minutes. That's a nice place. I use YouTube a lot. Mm-hmm. Many of my clients love to cook and we're always working on verbs. So we might go to the Food Network or look up their favorite chef and pull up a recipe and talk about it. And then I might show the recipe. I'll share my whole screen. I'll put the recipe on one side where they can annotate literally on top of it, like put boxes around the verbs. And then I might have Google Slides over here where I'm taking screenshots of things and dropping them into Google Slide.
That's really cool.
Use Google Slides kind of as my whiteboard, because you can't have a whiteboard and share at the same time.
Yep.
Zoom, fix it.
Right.
I wish I could drop pictures on my whiteboard on Zoom, but on the HIPAA compliant Zoom platform, you can't do as much with it as you can on a corporate.
Right.
So I use Google Slides a lot. All of my clients, we use, I have Google Workspace, the HIPAA compliant version of it. Everybody has a shared folder. So every session, anything we make, whiteboards, or if we're working on a recipe and annotating on that, I take a Zoom screenshot of it, rename it, and it goes in their folder. So they actually have every bit of documentation to review, to practice.
Yeah, I love using Google Suite for those kinds of things too. A lot of schools will use Google Suite. So if you can, you know, access that through the school, then I, you know, just today I was like, okay, let's make this a Google Doc and I'll share with both of you guys, you know, what to do, what we shouldn't do when we're frustrated and what we could do instead. And just sending that off so they can have those notes too, and they can have a visual during the session and then the notes after as well.
Yeah. I didn't have this when I was in person.
Exactly.
And that's part of why it's so, that's where I think telepractice for the folks that I work with,
right,
you know, and where they are in their journey, it works so great. But then I feel think back to home care when I did that for so long and,
right,
you know, very different, right? Very functional in the home, what has to be done kind of a thing. For helping them figure out hobbies or whatever the case may be. We've actually gone on virtual connections, the Lingraphica virtual connections, online support group and activities. And they've got tons of topics. I've actually gone in there with clients, introduced them, let the client kind of take over. I mean, we get creative. The world's our oyster as far as I'm concerned when we have telepractice. We definitely get creative. When I've had grad students, they're like, you can do that? I'm like, yeah, just figure it out and pivot. There are some days I'm more mentally flexible than others.
Yeah.
I think that's a new t-shirt logo. The world is our oyster in telepractice.
See?
Add it to the list.
The power of the internet at our fingertips. But I definitely hear, I don't tend to preview stuff. I guess I'm a little more flexible, can be flexible with adults.
Right.
Because if they go on YouTube, they have to sit through the car insurance commercial for 8 seconds. And so I just mute it, let it play, and we talk over it, and then we get started.
I do have a hack that if you are using YouTube and you put a dash between the T and the U in YouTube, I think that's where it is, then it pulls it up as like an ad-free version of it.
I heard you say this on an episode last year, but I thought it only worked with kids' sites.
I think it works with any of them. Okay. I think anytime you pull up a YouTube link, if you put a dash between the T and the U, it'll pull it up as like ad-free.
That's amazing, Kim.
I know. With mine, I pull them up and it has like my kids' watch history at the bottom of it.
Right.
Although one time it had like some true crime YouTube that I had been watching that were at the bottom of it.
There it is.
That's, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I tend, depending on who I'm working with, I'll use the annotation tools on Zoom and I'll just put a white box and I
block
out everything.
Yeah.
And then I annotate
that works too.
Top of it.
Yeah.
During the video. And then I save that as a Zoom screenshot, rename it, put it in their folder.
That's great. You have such a system.
For the most part. For the most part, until it doesn't work. And then, right? There's that mental flexibility again.
Yep. Yep. That's great. Wow.
Lots of fun stuff. Lots of fun stuff.
So, Genevieve, I was going to ask, do you run into issues of just computer literacy with some of your clients, your patients?
Sometimes. So, I'll answer this by saying I pre-screen. Not everybody is the right candidate for telepractice. I had a daughter call me one day and said, oh, I saw your website. I really love what you do. I really want my mom to work with you. And I said, I just started asking some technology stuff. Has your mom used a computer? Oh, and I also found out her mom's like 85. So I'm already thinking, we might probably be on the edge. And then she said, yeah, my mom's never used a computer. And I'm like, well, then we're states away. Yeah, like we're half a nation away. I'm in Texas. They were in California. And, you know, it was a matter of talking through what was necessary. I have had clients that I've had to do some training with. I have a full telepractice guide. It's, I don't know, 12 pages with screenshots and directions. And I usually know, oh, I'll back up a sec. I used to do phone consultations. First, I did Zoom and then I found it was just kind of clunky. And then I went to phone consultations and I found that that just didn't serve the purpose. I really need to see the person, you know, if they're completely backlit and all I see is like, you know, an outline or, you know, they don't know where the charger is to plug in their laptop. You know, on the consultation, it allows us to start, you know, kind of ferreting out what the problems could be and if they're a good fit. And if they're just getting too frazzled and frustrated with it, it's not going to be a good fit. And I'm going to help them get hooked up with someone else.
Yeah. Person. And I think, yeah. And I think that's how we keep that, you know, integrity of telepractice and saying that it's equal or better than in person is sometimes having those boundaries of like, this doesn't work in this situation. I recently had, I've been cycling through different aids that bring in my kids. And I finally just had to say, I will not do an evaluation with an aide that is not familiar with telepractice because I can't feel comfortable saying that I know that it was done like with fidelity. Yeah. If it's lately, it's been the secretary's husband. That's a first and a new one that for my aide that's bringing in my students. So, and I think that that's how we keep that integrity is having those boundaries.
Definitely. Yeah. And I do think the pandemic taught us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do iPhone, back of the car, mom driving to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Right? You've done those, Kim, I know.
I have. I have. Yep.
Right. But at the time, that's what we had to work with until we had some standards, till we had some experience, so we got people trained. The people meaning the families, understanding that what is your kid really learning at that moment, being distracted by the world going by perhaps out the window.
Right.
I tend to pick on that example a lot, but it was the same with the adult population. You know, if they've never been on a computer before, they don't know where to look. They don't know how to adjust the view. They don't know how to annotate. You know, and then they're like writing something and like trying to figure out how to hold it up to the camera. So we definitely have to have standards, and it doesn't matter with what population we serve.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to lose telepractice.
Right.
Right. Right. I was going to ask Genevieve, did you find in Kim during the pandemic and Todd during the pandemic, I found it was really, really nice to be able to bring services into the home, because we found that parents being involved or caregivers being involved, even brothers or older brothers or younger brothers and sisters being involved, really facilitated carryover of skill. And that's something I miss now that we've kind of gone back, where a student might be brought to services by with an e-helper or come independently based on their age. But having that, it was really, really nice being able to kind of instantly or during a session connect with a caregiver that they could then practice after the session was over.
Yeah, I think that is really nice. I wish I had seen more parents during the pandemic. I think that would have been the ideal. I think the reality was that there were more than one kid home and parents still trying to work. And so I did have some, you know, it was usually the older students, hopefully third, fourth, fifth grade, and hopefully not younger than that, that were sitting there by themselves still. But in general, I do like the better connection to the home environment whenever I can get it.
Yeah.
I have one client I work with who's 20, and he loves nothing more than to pick up his laptop and walk me through his house to show me something, you know, whatever it is. It's just not an issue. But I also love that his mom can be right there.
Mm-hmm.
Or his mom's in the background and I can always call her in. I love training with family that are in another state.
Yeah.
They're in one state.
Yeah.
I'm in a state. They're, you know, I can do such effective communication partner training with a variety of people or the best friends. I did a Zoom with five best friends of a client because they were super involved with her and they wanted to know how to support her and how to help her communicate. And we did a giant Zoom and it was the best session. In my memory, it was just so incredibly powerful that we could connect. I could type stuff up on the board. I could email it to all of them. And so they remember what we did, and also recordings. I don't know how you guys do with recordings, but I would get consents from, you know, written consents when somebody comes on, but I always ask if I'm going to record. I always ask before I hit the record button and get it verbally at that moment. But being able to share those recordings too, that plus the whiteboard, plus other people, boom.
Magic.
It is magic.
That's great.
So I think we've kind of covered all like cases and things kind of in and out of describing these different situations that have come up. But I was going to just offer again, is there a really specific case that stands out that you guys like to share?
I have one. I've been thinking about it. So we had a case where a student was on the spectrum. And this was actually during my dissertation when I was comparing on-site versus telepractice outcomes. And the student did so much better on telepractice versus on site. And we were kind of just looking at it. And even over since then, thinking about it, one really nice thing about telepractice is it really kind of levels the ground in terms of sensory or other stimuli that might kind of get in the way of the student being able to focus or attend or participate in the session. So this particular student really liked very, very silky, soft clothing. And, you know, people don't really think about that when we're going on site to deliver services, how distracting some of those sensory, some of those visual things or tactile things may be. But it was just really interesting thinking about, well, all of that is kind of eliminated when we deliver services through telepractice. And the student made so many gains. That was then carried over.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
Love that. I would just say I don't have one specific case because I do so many different things with each, but I really love being able to share my iPad plugged in over a wireless, you know, forget the wireless, plug it in, people.
Yes.
And being able to show something. So I use a program called Constant Therapy. It's a subscription program that I will get certain ones of my clients on. And I'm allowed to have the clinician version. So I can log into their account and show them from the backside of Constant Therapy how I make my decisions to pick activities. And then I can literally did this 2 hours ago. They only started on Constant Therapy on Friday. And today was the first day I got into their account. I was able to show them their progress, their graph. They could see exactly how much time they invested. There's a little calendar on it. And you tap on the date and it shows how many different activities they did for how long. And for this gentleman, he's an engineer. So he loves data. He loves data. He loves to understand it. He always wants to know the why. So I was able to show him what he did over the weekend, as well as trial out some tasks with him and get him set up on the right level. And then he got to see that there's all these options I have to choose from for setting him up. And I just thought it was so incredibly powerful. And for him in particular, or those that are like engineers, scientists that need that kind of data, that would be harder to do in person. Because what, you're sitting right next to each other and you're looking at the same device. Maybe it would work. But I love being able to show it to them and be able to, you know, draw with annotation tools. Here's where you look. Yeah. Here's where you look. Here's how to get the prompt to say it again. You know, let's go back to the exam and just really do some nice hands-on training. And by the end of our session today, he was independent. He got it. So he, what was interesting is he has a fluent Wernicke's type aphasia and his comprehension is not awesome. It's improving. It's improving like leaps and bounds, but being able to really demonstrate and take the time to work through and annotate, like here's where you focus your attention. Did you hear it? Yes or no? It just was tremendous with the training.
So, that's really cool.
That's really nice. Yeah.
Lots of different ways. So I love using iPad for that, or teaching accessibility tools on the iPad or the iPhone.
Yeah. My favorite accessibility tool that I've been using is Google Lens.
What?
Oh my gosh. And you can through telepractice. Okay. So Google Lens is a form of augmented reality. Where when you open it, you can point your camera at any print. So any handwritten note, any like worksheet, anything, it will highlight the text and then you can read it aloud and then you can listen to it. So it's instant, like print to speech, which is amazing. And you, with screen sharing, you can do it via telepractice. So I could show somebody how to do it through telepractice when they kind of screen share their phone.
Neat.
So it's
cool.
Amazing in terms of accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like amazing.
I have some students that have a really hard time reading and I think that would be great for them.
It's kind of a game changer for our kids with reading disabilities or even those kids who can read, but then they get to that like one word that trips them up and they might have low tolerance and get like extremely frustrated and dysregulated. You can literally just point your camera at that word. Again, it doesn't matter if it's handwritten. It doesn't matter if it's on paper. It will recognize the text and you can listen to it instantly.
That's amazing. I've also talked to some of my students who have like ADHD about using things like Speechify.
Yes.
Or that would work as well, just to get that like multi-sensory, you know, like maybe you could fidget with your hands and listen to your textbook instead of trying to read it. Things like that.
Yep.
All of that applies for aphasia too.
Yeah.
I have lots of folks that are limited to one word productions, and they will tend to type things into their phone and then have the phone read it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would work as well.
There's just so many options.
Michelle, I think you had talked to me about a case of a child in the classroom. I think using Google Lens to be able to.
Oh my gosh.
Understand.
Yes.
The future. Yeah. Okay.
So this is a student. He was in fourth grade, probably, but still reading at like a CVC level. Like we're talking three letter words. He had a really high interest. So he was really into like soccer and skateboarding and like all of these like really, you know, fourth grade type things, but he couldn't access the text. Like he was literally at, you know, kind of mm-hmm. a kindergarten grade one level. So this is maybe last year. He's on our speech and language caseload, but I went in to go kind of co-treat with a special educator to try out Google Lens for him for the first time. So this is the first time he'd ever even really tried it. We had it on an iPad, like on the speech and language iPad. We got it working. And first of all, he figured out how to work it in like 30 seconds. The special ed teacher, she's like, hold on. Like she needed like the screen caps of like, how do I do this? But he literally instantly was able to figure it out. What's amazing is the first thing that he did is he walked around the room with Lens open, looking at and listening to all of the different posters and the signs that were just in his special education environment. Things that we would have, like I would have no idea that was the first thing.
He didn't know what it said.
But he didn't know.
Yeah.
And they were like, part of his environment that he wanted to access. Then this like makes us cry every time I think about it. So if I tear up, sorry. Then he takes it into his classroom. He takes our iPad with Lens still open into the classroom. And he goes up to the whiteboard where the teacher had handwritten a note to the class. And for the first time ever, for the first time throughout his entire year, he was able to listen to that message that the teacher wrote to the class independently. And it was just, we were like, the teacher and I looked at each other. We're like, we're seeing his world open up right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just remarkable. And even this morning, she sent me an email. She's like, so-and-so got his tablet. He opened it right up. And it's one of those types of tools that when people learn how to use it can really change their life.
Well, that case study describes one of my current students almost perfectly.
Yeah.
So I know now what I can go and tell the other special educators and the case manager and everybody to see if we can get him access to that because Yeah.
It's free.
A lot.
And if you just have an updated Chrome, like Google Chrome,
mm-hmm.
There's the icon. It's right on the search button. So it's like a little camera icon. You just activate that and it's like, it's amazing. It does instant translations. It does instant like image searches. It's a remarkable tool.
I see that's going to be a game changer for my folks with aphasia going to restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many menus are not aphasia friendly. You know,
nope.
They don't have the pictures.
Right.
They are beholden to whoever is with them to order for them.
This totally changes.
Wow. Yeah.
Hey, even my husband is almost blind. And we have gone to a drive-thru before. Like, I just remember that there is a ice cream place and he was making me read every single flavor of all of the ice cream and they were in alphabetical order. And then when I got to the end of the list, he picked apple pie, which was the first one.
That's really
so
funny.
I mean, he's super techie. So if he could pull up his phone and have that read it to him
yes.
so he didn't have to rely on his poor eyesight, even that low vision, it's everything. Yeah.
My daughter has low vision and she uses it. And another really nice thing is if kids wear wireless earbuds,
mm-hmm.
nobody knows that they're accessing this. It's like their secret power. Like, it's just this form of technology that provides instant access with very, like, with basically no kind of social, you know, like social nervousness. Yeah. I know there's a word for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we're thinking about inclusion, you know, trying to include our kids in the regular education classroom as much as possible, if past third grade, a lot of teachers just assume that kids can read and stop using those visual supports along with it. So I can see that that would give them access to so many things in the regular education classroom.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I learned like three major
things
that are going to revolutionize, you know, how to deliver.
Change how to do it. Yeah. I know I'm going to have to like sit down with notes, re-listen after we're done. Right. Take my notes.
The screen sharing, the YouTube, the dash between the U and the T. I'm going to look that up and get back to you on that. And then Google Lens. Like, holy cow, what a game changer. Mm-hmm. That Google Lens. Why don't we all know about this? I was just in the, I'm sure we're wrapping up, but I was just in the Apple store getting my, after my kid broke her phone for the, you know, whatever number of times. And the gentleman that was helping us is in a wheelchair. And he was just, I could ask him any question. I used to be super up on all the Apple stuff. 10 years ago, when I had more time, I used to go hang out at the Apple store and take classes and do the one-on-one training. And I loved it. I consumed every bit of Apple, but busier you get and the more advanced they get, I feel like I'm getting left behind. Anyway, this gentleman was so into accessibility because he was in a wheelchair, but everything else worked fine, but he was so into it. And Apple's got these amazing videos on YouTube, and I think it's called Apple Cares on YouTube. Lots of these beautifully crafted videos on how to use their accessibility features for somebody who has a progressive condition like an ALS or maybe even a PPA. There's a video in there about how this man is doing voice banking with his iPhone.
That is awesome.
It gives me chills. So I say this because I used to be into it and used to follow it, but I've gotten away from it. Why don't we have a spot? I don't know. It's inspired me to go back and spend more time learning again and really thinking outside the box how we can use these amazing computers that we carry in our hand or our pocket or you know, our ears. To really help with inclusion for anybody with a communication disorder.
Right.
That's what it's all about, right?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Amazing.
Well, guys, I think I want to be respectful of your time. Thank you guys for coming back and joining us on this episode. I have learned a lot. I think we've all learned a lot from each other, which is wonderful. How can people reach out to you guys if they want to say hello or get more information? So, Michelle, how can people reach out to you?
So you can find me through my website, our website, which is easyreportpro.com. There's a contact us section that people can go to send us a little message. We're on social media, so we're on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn through either Easy Report Pro or me, Michelle Boisvert. And we always welcome people reaching out and contacting us. We love it.
And I have to put a plug in. Easy Report Pro is one of those technologies that will change your life. If you are a school-based SLP who has something like 9 evaluations due. That wasn't me this year, but my in-person, on-the-ground person that's helping me, they have 9 evaluations due, and it will change your life.
I always love talking to Kim. Because
best plug right there.
I will plug you till the day I die.
And Genevieve, how can people reach out to you?
Life Speech Pathology is the name of the business. Do Life, because it's about doing life, right? After aphasia. Do Life, speechpathology.com. Same handle on all the social media platforms. You can find on YouTube. We have a lot of YouTube videos back in when I was doing 10 months of live shows. There's 10 months of live shows on there. But I also have the Listen for Life Aphasia podcast. And I'm happy to say, I think we're on 86 this week.
Such so newbies. Awesome. Newbies, newbies.
I know. I'm looking forward, Todd, to getting to 200. But, you know, it's about getting the information out to the masses that no matter what communication issue you have, you don't have to do this alone.
Very great. True. Well, thank you guys again. Come back at 300, 400.
Sounds and, great.
We'll keep the party going.
Yes. Okay. And thank you both for like doing this podcast, inviting us to come and talk about what we do and what we love. It's really amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a great evening.
I want to thank Michelle and Genevieve for joining us on the podcast and helping us to celebrate our 200th episode. We couldn't do this without you, our listeners, so we really, really appreciate all of your support and encouragement over the past 4 years. And a special shout out to our audio engineer, Jordan Houston, who just happens to be my son, and he does an extraordinary job putting together the episodes every week. And thank you again for being such dedicated listeners to this podcast. If you don't mind, leave us that 5-star review. That helps us to attract new listeners and new subscribers. We would really, really appreciate that help. And until next time, be safe and be kind. This has been a production of the 3C Digital Media Network.